Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. We're coming to you from New York City, where indeed many of our listeners and a great number of people, not only in New York, but throughout the United States and in Ireland, are grieving for a great man, a great person, in Ambassador Dan Rooney, who passed away last week. And but he had many other attributes. I think as I welcome Kieran McLachlan, who is the worldwide president and CEO of the Ireland Funds. Kieran, we probably, the name Dan Rooney conjures up this brilliant man, owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, an exciting, always an innovative businessman. But it goes beyond that. Did you know him or know him fairly well?
Good morning, Adrian. I did know Dan. I had the great privilege of knowing Dan for many years. He was all that you've just described, a great leader, a great businessman, a great entrepreneur. But he was first and foremost a great humanitarian. He was a great philanthropist and a tremendous lover of all things Irish. And his legacy is the Ireland Funds and the thousands of lives that have benefited as a result of his vision and generosity.
If you take us back to 1976, there are a couple of obvious observations. One being that as successful in business as the Irish were and have been throughout the United States, in the mid-70s, there were very few philanthropic organizations that dealt specifically with Ireland and Ireland's needs at home and abroad. Is that fairly, would you say? Is that fairly
accurate? Yes, that's fair, Adrian. Of course, not only was the philanthropic scene here different, the circumstances in Ireland were very different. In the mid-70s, the troubles were raging in Northern Ireland, and the economy across the island was on its knees. So the intention of Dan, together with Tony O'Reilly, was to create a mechanism by which, those Irish of affluence and influence could direct support back to Ireland to assist the drive for peace and reconciliation, but also to support cultural expression and community development.
There was, and I think that the cultural development and community development was probably missing somewhat, because there was great empathy for those who were involved in the North and their supporters here, but it did somehow it took the light from the other problems, particularly the devastating, downturn in the economy. As a matter of fact, it wasn't even a downturn. It was that was pretty much a level of depression in Ireland, with little or no hope of what became key. Again, in part through the efforts of Dan Rooney and, of course, and his partner in O'Reilly and Rooney really introduced a new level, and in fact they didn't have tremendous success in those early years, as you have often told the story throughout the world. It wasn't a rip-roaring success on day one.
No, it was a downright failure. The first dinner was held in New York in 1976, and the only reason the second dinner occurred in 1977 was to pay off the first dinner in 1976. But, you know, from what little acorns, mighty oaks grow, that, you know, guided constantly by Dan and Tony over those 40 years, we've now grown, we're now in 12 countries, and we've raised $550 million. But, you know, all of that is rooted in Dan and Tony. They started out without any roadmap. As you said, nothing like the Ireland Funds existed at the time. They started out trying to address, you know, seemingly intractable problems in Ireland. And in all of this, they were guided by their own personal passion, belief, and ambition for Ireland. This is, I think, an important point to make, that they did what they did not out of pity for Ireland, but out of pride in Ireland.
Yes.
And an absolute belief in the creativity, the bravery, and the decency of the Irish people. And, you know, if what's extraordinary since Dan passed last week is just how everybody has remarked upon his incredible integrity and authenticity. Dan was absolutely egoless. His son Art remarked that Dan believed anything was possible so long as nobody was looking for praise. And that's, you know, came just naturally to Dan. I remember on one occasion, for instance, he was coming to one of our dinners as the guest of an organization. He said, you know, he said, I know they're going to say that because I'm there, we're to be in the front row. And he said, do me a favor, stick us next to the kitchens. You know, he almost shunned the limelight or any sort of accolades and praise. He was just focused solely on supporting others and where he could, most particularly the underdog.
And, you know, to start an organization having to do with Ireland, the island of Ireland during the time of the Troubles, that would be non-denominational and apolitical, was indeed subject to amazing scrutiny and doubt. And actually, that was, that was real. They had to deal with that as well.
Oh, yeah, again, I think the reason that they didn't fall into the trap of anyone being able to accuse them of being partisan or following an agenda was that their purpose was so clear, and actually it was quite simple. It was simply the simple simplicity which was contained in the three words, peace, culture, charity. That's what the Ireland Funds was founded to achieve, and again, the robustness of their view and their vision is the fact that four decades on, it is still our rallying cry. We celebrated our 40th anniversary last year, what Dan and Tony set out for us then remains absolutely. They were our pole stars, and they remain so today. And I'll tell you one thing that's poignant and powerful about Dan. You know, when he established the fund with Tony, they were young. They were in their early 40s. We have a program now, of course, called our Young Leaders Program, which is for young people in their 20s to their 40s coming up now, you know, establishing their philanthropic credentials, as it were. And Dan absolutely embraced that group very, very closely. He was so proud of them. He spent a lot of time with them. He encouraged them, not just in relation to their work with the Ireland Funds, but in relation to their own lives, etc., and their careers and their families. And that had a huge effect that, you know, this icon of Irish America, of American society, when you think about it, really cared about them. And that's what was the key to Dan. He had a concern for everybody, one person at a time. His funeral on Tuesday was an extraordinary affair. The cathedral in Pittsburgh was filled literally to the brim, and it was attended by Obama, so it was attended by everybody from a president of the United States right down to locker room attendants at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And at that funeral, we were all the same. We were all gathered in honor of that great, great man who would have treated everybody in that cathedral just the same.
I think it's worth noting also that as an American ambassador to Ireland, he visited every single county in Ireland, all 32 counties of Ireland, which was highly unusual, one might say abnormal, for an ambassador from countries that go there. They kind of sit and they rightly get the respect which they are due, and most people go to where they are in Ireland's case, say to Dublin. But Dan took to the roads right away. I think he had more than a passing interest, not only in his heritage, but also I think that he paid particular attention also to how the American Ireland funds, in his case, how that was after some four decades, how that actually was working, and he made no secret of that in terms of his interest was not parochial. It was indeed something of a tremendous interest and influence. Many counties in Ireland had never seen an American ambassador except for ribbon cutting here and there. He really absorbed Ireland, which he loved dearly and had supported all those years.
That's absolutely, but that's the point again. He wanted to be out among the people. He did not want to be in the gilded residence in the Phoenix Park. You know, he wanted to be out there in every corner of Ireland, listening to people. Dan just relished listening to people, hearing their stories, understanding their lives, and offering what advice he could. That's the key to the man. So yes. he said, and again, it's a simple goal. There was such clarity in what Dan wanted to do. It was a simple goal: visit every county in Ireland, and he achieved it. Mm. And isn't it funny when he said that, people were sort of, well, why would you want to do that? Now that he's done it, the sort of the genius of it is very clear, you know.
Yeah. You have, and it's a staggering amount, $550 million raised thus far over the four decades plus. How much of that money has been raised, say, over the last 10, 15 years?
Well, half of that, almost half of that, has been raised over the last 7 years, because we set out to... We instigated a campaign called the Promising Ireland Campaign,
right,
to respond to the turndown in Ireland. And the name was carefully chosen. It represented our pledge to Ireland and also our belief in Ireland and the promise of Ireland. Our original goal was to raise $100 million, but our donors' response was incredible, and we topped off at $226 million. So, you know, half of the $550 was raised since the crash in 08 for Ireland.
Which is, it's incredible, really, you know. And we do notice your smirk at those of us who say, you know, McLaughlin is warped. There's a downturn not just in Ireland, all over the money. Everybody is indeed struggling, and philanthropy is not going to make it. And yet... in your own evaluation, did some of that have to do with getting the message through that there was a definite need for this and now, regardless of the state of the economy.
Yeah, absolutely, Adrian. And this is what we've done. We established direct connections between our donors and projects. So we determine where somebody has, what is of interest to them, what's the priority to them. Is it kids? Is it education? Yeah. Is it peace work? Is it something in the arts, whatever? And then, or even what part of Ireland? And then we will make that a connection for them with a project that is responding to whatever that need is in the most impactful and imaginative way. And when you connect people with people, and when the donor can see, directly who's benefiting, and just the extent to which the change is occurring, that's when a relationship is established. And most of our donors are serial donors, so they can learn, they establish a connection with the project, and then they stick with it over a long period of time because they're interested in long-term fundamental change. And really, the success of the Ireland Fund is down to the donors. It's their decency, it's their generosity, it's their sheer love of Ireland and belief in Ireland, which has driven the numbers. And the numbers are, the numbers are one measure of us. But the real measure of what we do is, it's a bit like Dan, it's going out on the road and seeing it and visiting the communities. Some of our grants are very small. They're $10,000, $15,000. Yeah. And, it's quite extraordinary the impact that has on a community, the difference it can make and what people can do on the ground with even that small amount of money can be very, very dramatic and very inspiring. Yeah.
But I do think that it's worth noting that in fact you, as world president and CEO of the Ireland Funds, point out time and time again that this is not just a charitable check, a once-off, that in fact that you have partnerships, you support partnerships for those who'll be in the same, if you excuse the West of Ireland, shochron, as we might say, in the same mess this time next year, that in fact a lot of Ireland Fund money has assisted in startups. Would that be fair?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, let me give you one example. Music Generation, which is a remarkable project. That's a project to bring musical education to kids. Now, you might say it's a little arty and it's a little, rarefied, but it's not. A lot of the young people involved come from difficult backgrounds and excluded backgrounds and et cetera. But we work with the local community. So every dollar we give with U2 instigated the project and are the major donors, the bigger donors to this. But every dollar that we give, that U2 and I give, we give, is matched by the local community. So the local community is responding to this. So they're flexing not just their musical muscle, but their philanthropic muscle.
Right.
And the result is now that there are 35,000 kids across Ireland in every parish gaining from musical education, and it has created 330 jobs.
It's fantastic, but also it's kind of difficult to believe. One might say, from Ireland, the hotbed of music and traditional music and generations of great musicians and poets and writers, surely to God, that would be low on the totem pole in terms of supporting organizations. And it may come as a shock to most people to say, well, actually, there had not been any national organization taking care of that end at all. That's puzzling, number one, but it was real.
Oh, it came as a shock to me. Apparently, prior to Music Generation being established, and the reason Music Generation was established was because Irish kids had the lowest level of access to instrumental training, musical instrumental training, in the OECD. So it's funny. This is despite our much vaunted, you know, tradition of, you know, this idea that every child can play the tin whistle. It hasn't been the case. Maybe Music Generation will change that.
Mm-hmm. And it's on its way. 12 countries, yes. The Ireland funds are in 12 countries. Could you, you know, maybe give us an idea? That would initially, that would insinuate that there are 12 countries where piles of money are being raised, or piles, you know, are being raised to go into the general pot. Being in 12 countries, I would say that your net gain from the 12 countries that you are in right now would be considerably smaller than the American Ireland Fund.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, and that shouldn't be any surprise, because America is quite simply the most generous country in the world. It's not that the other 11 countries are the exception. It's that America is the exception. You know, last year in America, something in the order of $300 million was given away, and that's the equivalent of 2% of GDP. The average elsewhere in the world is about 0.5% of GDP.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just see that America is head and shoulders above the rest of the world in terms of its generosity. And in fact, philanthropy is a great American tradition and a great American export. One of the things we're trying to do is establish the American tradition of philanthropy wherever we operate. And, you know, seeing very encouraging signs that's beginning to take root.
Wherever, and from once we get past the enormity of seeing the success of fundraising now at 550 million plus, how is the money distributed, which is probably on everybody's mind by now, saying that's an awful lot of money, and how is it spread out?
It's the first thing to say is it's distributed more or less as we raise it. We don't sit on the money, you know.
Right.
We are constantly making gifts. So there isn't an enormous pot there at any given time, only on the basis that we're trying to get the money out to our grantees as quickly as we can.
Yes.
So we have a presence in Ireland. We have advisors around the country, very, very strong professional staff, and they will look at every single grantee, or applicant, I should say. They look at the impact, they look at the legal standing, and they look at the accounts over the last number of years to ensure there's nothing there that shouldn't be there. And if there's a problem, we will not accept the gift. And we've actually turned down around $20 million over the last number of years, because we've just not been satisfied that the recipient, not necessarily there's anything wrong with the recipient, but that they could use the money. Sometimes the offer of a big gift could overwhelm an organization.
Right.
They just wouldn't have the capacity to use it. And we will always advise the donor and tell the donor we just won't take the gift. But I have to tell you that the vast majority of Irish charities are outstanding. They really deliver. Yes. Many of them are operating on a shoestring. One project we're very proud of is called Benefax, which will introduce much greater level of transparency to the not-for-profit sector in Ireland. It's an online database where all the financials of Irish charities can be accessed by the public, and they'll be compared comparatively with peers in the group and all that. It'd be, you know, people listening would probably be familiar with Charity Navigator and GuideStar, again, independent evaluators of charities.
Right.
Benefax is based on that model. It's not quite as sophisticated as they are just yet, but then again, it's only starting. But that's what we hope it'll eventually provide, so the public in Ireland can assess, you know, which charities they really want to back and which are the ones that are making the biggest difference.
When you have an organization like the Ireland Funds, there is a spotlight on your organization, and in fact, since you have nothing to hide, it's no harm to point out that you've always had that the organization always has been in the higher ratings with respect to how the funds, how everything is, how the fund itself is run. That makes it a bit more difficult when you're in 12 countries, because you are actually being judged on the entire world organization, and so you must be doing something right, and that's something to be proud of, really.
Well, you know, transparency is empowering, because once everything is out there, and there's nothing to hide, as it were, there's nothing to worry about. I mean, people might take a view, well, look, their overheads are too high, their overheads are too low, which is another, I mean, Warren Buffett said he'll never invest in something that where the overheads are too low because they won't be able to deliver. But whatever view anyone takes, they're entitled to make their own view.
Yes.
With full information. So it's very, very empowering. And, you know, we're committed to it. We've been assessed externally, and we're achieving that. But look, you know, Adrian, you're saying very, very kind things about us, and thank you so much. We've an awful lot to do to get better, like any organization does. Yeah. Our board is wonderfully engaged. We're trying to improve all the time, getting better at our asking, getting better at our delivery, becoming more and more professional, delivering better impact in that. Because, you know, when donors are being as generous as they are, they deserve that, and the projects deserve it across Ireland, and the projects we support here in Irish America as well, of course.
Yes. Now, before we get on to the New York Dinner Gala taking place on Thursday, the 4th of May, coming up very rapidly, I do want to ask you, though, about perhaps listeners or those who feel that they would like to donate money either to a project, a startup, a charity, something, but they would like to make sure that their money is, you know, doesn't go astray. I think rightfully so. The American Ireland Funds have, you know, not only said, well, we can be the conduit, but we'll also make sure that regardless of your desire to transfer your money, as it were, we'll also, the same standards will apply. We're not going to be, take your money in because you say you wanted to go here and you're only using the 501c3. You actually make the accommodation, but with the same guidelines you use for everybody else.
Oh, well, you know, all of the projects that we support are projects that we vet and oversee. So we determine where the money goes, absolutely. And we introduce the projects to the donors. Now, donors might be aware of certain things happening in Ireland.
And, right.
They might say, well, look, have you considered supporting such and such? And if you see fit to support it, we'd happily help you in that. But you're dead right. It would be unusual if we hadn't heard about it. But if we hadn't heard about it, we would still put it through the same rigorous process. And only when it was, met our standards,
right,
would we accept a gift on behalf of whatever that organization
yes.
was. So,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. And as I say, if we've turned down money, $20 million, over the last while, because just the fit wasn't right. And in doing that, we're helping protect our donors.
Yes.
You know, who might say, well, you know, I'm interested in doing this. Somebody's told me about this project, and you know, we can say, you know what, they're not up to snuff, or they have to make improvements. And then what we will do is we will work with the project where
right.
we think improvements can be made. You know,
it all comes back though to the support of peace and culture and community development, education. You know, not only, and it's throughout the island of Ireland, I think for many years it was assumed that you were talking about the troubled area of Northern Ireland. This is actually a project for the island of Ireland.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Every part of the island of Ireland, north and south, and, of course, some of the great work that's happening in Irish America, particularly the Irish immigration centres, who are experiencing a huge increase in demand on their services just now with all the uncertainty. In fact, we gave a gift of 100,000 to the Coalition of Irish Centres just to help on a humanitarian basis there. But yes, you know, we support, like Dan, our work is found in every county in Ireland.
The dinner, which is coming up again, as I say, the New York Dinner Gala, singularly each year, the major and biggest fundraising arm of all the organizations and of all the dinners that you hold throughout the 12 countries, but the New York Dinner Gala is and has been, you know, the major one. That's the one that has to go right. And, you know, each year it seems to be getting somewhat more successful. And there is a danger, of course, that you will, you know, hit a high bar and then say, well, where do we go from here? You have to admit that it has been wildly successful and growing each and every year.
Well, you know, again, incredible generous support from our committee, our chairs, our honorees, and our dinner purchasers, table purchasers, purchases of, you know, messages in the journal. They come back every year. It's a tribute to them, really. And their real desire just to see great change in Ireland and to support Ireland,
right.
And so it's wonderful to work with those people.
And many of them, indeed, they're not all in Manhattan. You, your contributors and supporters for the New York Dinner Gala, these are people from all over the United States who, you know, get together for that one massive fundraising event.
Oh, we just got a donation today from a donor in Denver, you know, which is really great of him. If he's listening, he knows who he is. A little early for him, perhaps. But, you know, yeah, no, it's great. It's on Thursday, the 4th, May 4th, in Pier 60. It's a great Irish party, as we say, but an Irish party with a purpose. And we're on. We've a great honoree, Jim O'Donnell of City, headed up, and our chair this year is a fellow City professional, Dan Keegan, two great Irish Americans who, you know, they've got great personalities, great, but you know, the financial services sector's gain is the loss of the world of stand-up comedy. These guys are a great bit of fun. They'll be great ambassadors, and they have a lot of friends who'll want to be there to salute them both.
For many years, as we attend this great gala, going back, of course, to the leadership and the chairmanship of Loretta Brennan Glucksman, who is a legend in her own, and if we were to talk about Loretta and her attributes, maybe we should have done that at the beginning of this segment. It's now getting too late for that. but we do know that the generosity of Loretta Merlin Glucksman, and indeed I would imagine that any of Loretta's friends and her husband Lou, who founded Glucksman Ireland House at NYU, many of them might say, I wonder when Loretta or when Lou is going to put the arm on us to pitch in. And very, very much Loretta deserves a lot of credit for bringing, you know, the American Ireland Fund to new heights. We'd have to hand her that much.
Oh, look, she's the First Lady of Irish America. Yeah. We love Loretta. Loretta did a remarkable job over 18 years, and I know Loretta is so pleased that she's been succeeded by John Fitzpatrick, and John has taken on that mantle and done an incredible job. You know, and driven the growth that Loretta began. So, you know, we've had a seamlessness from Tony and Dan to Loretta to John, and we as an organization, you know, we're blessed by the leadership that we have had. John was wonderful this week. He got to Ireland just in time for Easter. Then the devastating news about Dan broke, and he was back on a plane, and he was in Pittsburgh on Monday evening, and back on a plane on Tuesday evening after the funeral, but he wouldn't have wanted to be anywhere else but to bid farewell, not just to our founder, but to a dear friend.
Now, the dinner, again, it's on Thursday, May 4th, at Pier 60 in Chelsea Piers, you know, probably one of the most amazing venues in New York City for those of us who have attended there. I think we still kind of are shocked by the enormity and the atmosphere, you know, of Chelsea Piers, off the, you know, it's off the West Side Highway there, 23rd Street. It's an experience in itself.
Oh, look, the piers were, Pier 60 was one of the hits of the event last year. It was a wonderful, glorious, open space, beautiful space. The staff were fantastic. It's run by a great Irishman, Paul Gallen, wonderful, wonderful ambassador of the motherland, as it were, you know.
Right.
And we didn't even have the balconies open. The terrace is open last year. Hopefully it'll be slightly less Irish night this year, you know.
Yeah.
But with the terraces, it's spectacular. But it really is. It was a hit, and we found our new home, and our guests were wowed by the place.
Let's leave it at that. By the way, there's dancing, and you know, there's a cocktail reception, dinner. It's a very, very elaborate event. It is a black tie event, and let's make it easy for those who may indeed perhaps reach. It's pricey. But having said that, there are a great number of people who work for organizations that indeed where matching funds are, you know, are available, and maybe, you know, some organizations who have very little contact, say, with the American Ireland Fund, or the Ireland Funds probably don't know that much about it. That's the way new people who show up each year, many of them are coming to represent companies that are just coming on board. So that's a good idea.
Yeah. Look, it's a great night. It's a great celebration of Ireland, of Irish success, of American generosity. It really is. It delivers. It delivers for people who are making real, real change, wonderful change on the ground.
Ciarán, just give us a website and a telephone number.
Sure. Theislandfunds.org at 212-689-3100.
Okay, islandfunds.org, and the telephone number is 212-689-3100. My guest, Kira McLaughlin, Worldwide President and CEO of the Ireland Funds. Thank you for joining us, indeed, Kieran. God bless.
Thank you. Good luck, Adrian. Bye-bye.